A deal within reach if the West shows goodwill. That is the message from Iran after it submitted proposals to revive the 2015 nuclear agreement. But is goodwill enough? And can a new deal hold this time? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Kim Vinnell. Iran has submitted two draft proposals to European powers negotiating the revival of the 2015 nuclear agreement. The seventh round of talks in Vienna is aimed at bringing Iran and the US back into the deal. They're expected to resume next week. But competing visions of the countries involved make success a very long shot. The talks are meant to limit Iran's nuclear programme in exchange for sanctions relief. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says there is little cause for optimism. Tehran is doubting Washington's determination to revive the 2015 accord. Iran's chief negotiator, Ali Bagheri Khani, told Al Jazeera in an exclusive interview that world powers cannot reject its draft proposals. Ali Hashim has more from Vienna.
Ali Bagheri Khani, Iran's deputy foreign minister and top negotiator, spoke to Al Jazeera in an exclusive interview. He explained his country's posture with respect to the nuclear talks taking place here in Vienna.
The proposals tabled by Iran cannot be rejected at all because they are based on the provisions of the 2015 nuclear agreement. And in principle, the countries which are still the participants of the JCPOA, they do not want to ruin the nuclear document. All the sanctions which have been imposed or reimposed under the so-called maximum pressure campaign of the United States, they should be removed immediately.
According to Bagheri Khani, there are two proposals that were submitted to the world powers, and they have no options to refuse them because they were built upon what was agreed on in the 2015 deal. Ali Bagheri Khani also denied reports that Iran is planning to enrich uranium up to 90% clarity, which is a weapons grade. And he said that these were reported by Israeli media and that the IAEA chief refuted them and denied them, and that Iran won't take such measures that are outside its commitments to the international United Nations nuclear watchdog. So many issues Ali Bagheri tackled in his interview with Al Jazeera when asked whether how Iran is going to deal with an Israeli strike on its facilities. He said that Israel won't dream to do that because it will cease to exist. This was Ali Hashim for Inside Story from Vienna.
Well, let's rewind to how this all began. Iran signed the nuclear deal in 2015 with the so-called P5 plus one, made up of France, the UK, China, Russia, the United States and Germany. It was designed to limit Tehran's nuclear ambitions in exchange for sanctions relief. In 2018, former President Donald Trump pulled the US out of the nuclear accord, calling it the worst deal ever negotiated, and began reimposing sanctions on Iran. Tehran responded by scaling back its commitments to the deal and enriching uranium beyond the agreed cap. Biden says Iran must curb some of its nuclear activities before it's prepared to rejoin. But Iran insists that its nuclear program is entirely peaceful. Joining me now are our guests in Vienna, where the talks are being held, is Mohammad Mirandi, advisor to the Iranian delegation. In Washington, D.C., we have Hilary Mann Leverett, author and former White House national security official and diplomat. Hilary is a negotiator with Iran and co-authored Going to Tehran, Why America Must Accept the Islamic Republic of Iran. And in Berlin, we have Hamid Reza Azizi, a specialist on Iran foreign policy and a visiting fellow at the German Institute for International and Security Affairs. A very warm welcome to you all. Thank you for joining us here on Inside Story. I'd like to begin with you, Mohammad Mirandi. You are obviously there in Vienna advising the negotiating team there. What details can you share, if any, on the draft proposals which have been submitted to the Europeans? And I believe a third one is waiting in the wings. Has there been any response to them so far?
Well, they're negotiating them, I suppose, right now down the hall. So we'll know a bit more later on. What is important, though, is that the two draft documents are based on the JCPOA, the nuclear deal. In other words, the Iranians have not demanded anything more than what was given to them in accordance with the nuclear deal, which was signed in 2015. And the fact that the Americans and the Europeans and their spin doctors are nagging and complaining is because they don't want to implement the nuclear deal in full. Their intention never was to implement the deal. In fact, when Obama agreed to the deal, immediately afterwards, he, while on paper he signed one thing, in reality, he told his Treasury Department to force banks, to warn banks not to cooperate with Iran. And that was a clear violation of the deal. So from the very start, the United States had no intention of implementing the deal. And now the Iranians are insisting that a framework has to be created where the Americans and the Europeans are obliged to abide by their commitments in full and that it is verified.
Okay.
And this makes them unhappy, but it's the only way forward.
I want to put that actually to Hilary Mann-Leverett. When we spoke to you during the last rounds of talks, you said there was a reluctance in the Biden administration to go back to the JCPOA at all. Do you think that is still the case?
I think it is. There are a lot of problems in the JCPOA for the Biden administration. First and foremost, if they went back into the JCPOA, the Biden administration would have to go to Congress by 2023 to get Congress to lift all sanctions. The Biden administration knows that is not possible. I'm not sure why the Obama administration committed to that, given the domestic politics here in the United States. It seems like it was a pipe dream then, and it's certainly not a reality today. So in terms of some of the flaws in the JCPOA, the Biden administration, I think, doesn't want to go back to it fully. But importantly, I think the Biden administration does see some benefit to the JCPOA. And I say this not necessarily in a positive sense, but they see benefit in being full members. The Biden administration sees benefit in being full members of the JCPOA in order to use the JCPOA for two reasons. One, to invoke its snapback sanctions clause, which means that the United States could go to the Security Council at any time and snap back sanctions, not just from the United States, not just for the Europeans, but for China and Russia as well. The other reason that the United States sees the JCPOA is useful is that it's a useful platform to, they would say, discuss, but perhaps more accurately be to pressure Iran on other issues like its missiles, regional developments, and the like.
Okay, I'd like to bring you in, Hamed Reza Azizi. You're a specialist on Iran foreign policy. These are the first talks in 5 months, the first since Iran elected its new president. What, given everything we've heard from our contributors up until this point, what is it that got all the sides to the negotiating table to revive these talks now?
First of all, I should say that I'm not quite optimistic to this round of talks, because as we just heard from our colleagues, and also we've been seeing, in the formal statements made by different sides during the talks, actually what I can see is that both sides are demanding a kind of JCPOA plus, or actually they are demanding some extra benefits from the talks that were not actually within the JCPOA, because on the U.S. side, as Hillary just mentioned, there is this desire to use this talks or the JCPOA as a platform for further negotiations. And on the Iranian side, it seems that there is this intention to keep at least part of the achievements they have made in the form of nuclear advances. So based on this, I think this round of negotiations have been mostly about kind of testing the waters to see to what extent these objectives are achievable. And for this reason, I'm saying that at least at this point, I'm not too optimistic, unless the two sides move from their current positions toward each other, and that's the only way that a compromise can be found. Otherwise, with this, as I said, JCPOA plus like demands that the both sides have, I don't see any prospect for a successful deal or revival of the JCPOA, basically.
Mr. Mirandi, is that the case? Is Iran demanding a JCPOA plus with extra benefits to keep some of its nuclear advances?
No, definitely not. The Iranians have lost hundreds of billions of dollars as a result of the U.S. violations of the nuclear deal, both under Biden and Trump and Obama as well, by the way. So the Iranians only began restarting the elements of the nuclear program that they stopped or that they slowed down or that they limited a year after the United States and the Europeans effectively left the deal and tore up the deal. And only then did the Iranians gradually decrease their commitments. And by the way, they decreased those commitments within the framework of the nuclear deal itself, because Articles 26 and 36 allowed Iran to decrease its commitments when the other side does not abide by its commitments. Mm-hmm. So if Iran has achieved anything, it's because the other side violated the deal. And if Iran has achieved anything, it was because the other side was harming the Iranian economy well before Iran restarted these elements of the nuclear program. So there's no moral equivalence here. Iran is clearly the victim. But if Iran has achieved something as a result of the other side's violation, which caused hundreds of billions of dollars for the Iranian people, then I don't think we can call that a JCPOA plus. The Americans want something more than what they get in the JCPOA. But in reality, if we want to be fair, Iran should demand compensation for what the Americans and the Europeans did to the Iranian people. People have died in hospitals. People have died because of a lack of medicines. Lives were broken. Families were broken. Jobs were lost. It affected communities dramatically and drastically. But the problem is for Europeans and Americans, lives in our part of the world really don't mean that much.
I want to come back to you in a moment, but first I'd like to put something that you said to Hilary Mann Leverett. Is Iran clearly the victim as far as the U.S. is concerned?
Well, I think there is a lot of objective data in terms of, I mean, just plainly, when President Trump tore up the deal and reimposed sanctions, plainly there was harm from that. I think it's important, though, to understand that it's not even just a question of what U.S. governments do. At this point, the atmosphere, the political culture has really become so distorted that, in fact, there was a poll released yesterday by the Brookings Institution that shows that the majority of Americans, both Republicans and Democrats, the majority of Americans believe that Iran has a nuclear weapons arsenal. The same majority of Americans, again, both Republicans and Democrats, do not believe that Israel has a nuclear arsenal. So the whole situation has become so distorted and so poisonous that I think for the Biden administration, regardless of where one's sympathies may lie with the Iranian people, the Biden administration just looks at the politics here and doesn't see a win other than to try to hold tried to put Iran into some kind of position where the United States is, in their view, holding Iran accountable for whatever it is in terms of their nuclear program.
Hamid Reza Azizi, the UN nuclear watchdog says Iran is expanding its uranium enrichment capabilities, that there's been a scaling back in terms of IAEA access to some nuclear sites. Western diplomats have said that without a full sort of understanding of Iran's capabilities, it's harder to reach an agreement. What is Iran's calculation then?
I think it's partly about calculations, but another part, a very important part in this, development of nuclear activities is related to kind of what we can call a reaction. And it's a reaction not only to the U.S. maximum pressure, as Mr. Marandi just mentioned, but also, and more importantly, I think, to the recent wave of Israeli sabotage attacks against its nuclear activities. So basically, I mean, honestly speaking, as we can see the developments on the ground, the more Israel tries to kind of slow down Iran's nuclear program, the more Iranians are determined to, develop their nuclear program. So this has been one of the main issues behind this development of activities. But on the other hand, in terms of calculation, of course, a very important part of the Iranian calculation has been to use it as a leverage. Because just imagine a situation if, after this whole maximum pressure and imposing the sanctions against Iran, if Iran wanted to come to the negotiating table without any actually in the position that it was before Trump's withdrawal, it would be in a very weak position. So that was, I think, one of the main reasons that Iran started in the first place to advance its nuclear activities. So the combination of these two factors have led us to the situation that we are now.
Mohammad Randi, Ebrahim Raisi, in his first public statement as president-elect, said that his government's foreign policy would neither begin nor end with the JCPOA, sort of indicating that it wouldn't be quite the foreign policy sort of focus that perhaps it had been in the past. Has Iran's position going into these talks this time, the seventh set of talks, has it changed at all?
No, not at all. In fact, I think one of the mistakes of former President Rouhani was to constantly say that the JCPOA or the nuclear negotiations were his priority, and that gave the Americans leverage. And constantly saying that we need a deal was like poison for the Iranian position and the Iranian negotiating team. What President Raisi is saying is that, look, we will do a deal if they accept the JCPOA in full. We'll sign up to it too. We will. Well, we've signed up to it. We've been implementing it, and we still are implementing it because our, as I said, the fact that we're not implementing the deal is itself our right in accordance with the two articles that I mentioned earlier. But the fact that President Raisi is saying our priority is to develop ties with regional countries, to develop ties with Asian countries, this is sending a signal to the United States that we're not going to be waiting for the JCPOA. We're not going to be waiting for it. If you want to commit yourself to the deal, fine. But if you don't, we're going to be developing our economy based upon the resources that we have at hand. We're not going to just sit there and hope that you're going to see the light.
I know you've talked a lot about the impact of U.S. sanctions. What do you think, though, how much difference will it make for Iran if the agreement is restored? Because if the next U.S. president just does the same thing that Trump does, you know, could that not be a warning sign, perhaps, or mean banks and businesses don't have the confidence that perhaps they once did?
Yes, and that's a major concern that the Iranian negotiators have, that the United States has become an unreliable country. There's so much instability in U.S. politics that we can't gauge what is going to happen tomorrow with the U.S. decision-making process. But what is a fact is that the United States today is much weaker than it was in 2015. It is a divided country. It has major economic, social, and political problems. It is confronting two rising powers, China and Russia and Ukraine and Taiwan, and over artificial intelligence. And U.S. allies in West Asia are floundering. They're on the decline, whereas the Iranian nuclear program, as your previous guest rightly pointed out, has developed thanks to the United States leaving the deal. And the Iranian position is much stronger today than it was in 2015. So time is not on the side of the Americans. But the problem is that the Americans often, I think they're looking at it from a position of arrogance. They don't see the reality on the ground is changing. And if they do, they don't have the will to do something about it.
Okay, Hilary Mann Leverett, do you agree with that assessment of America's strength or otherwise? And also from the U.S. perspective, has anything changed given Iran's new leadership?
This question about whether the U.S. is a power in decline is, of course, an important question. But the reality is, as long as the world, the international community, continues to trade and price everything, including oil, in the dollar, the U.S. dominance over the international financial system is really what will determine many matters at the end of the day. And so it may be that other countries are rising, other countries are challenging, but even in China, there continues to be a reliance on the dollar. So as long as the United States continues to have what may be called dollar hegemony, they will still have a powerful role, whether it's in the Middle East or elsewhere. And it may even be more dangerous, because if the United States is in fact a power in decline, as Professor Morandi said, riddled with all sorts of problems domestically, that could mean an America that is more willing to strike out overseas, as we saw during the Trump administration. While many people didn't like President Trump, many people ridiculed him, he was a dangerous figure. And there were real repercussions to that kind of behavior in the Middle East and in Iran. So I think regardless of whether one likes the U.S. government, likes what the United States does, it is important to deal with the United States, in a sense, constrain the worst aspects of U.S. behavior by international agreements like the JCPOA. So as flawed as it is, I think it is important to try to get back to either the JCPOA or something that at least tries to bound not just the United States, but all parties to some semblance of international standards and international law.
Hamad Reza Azizi, is the window of opportunity closing? Is there a time limit on these talks, or can they just continue ad nauseum?
Of course, there is no official or formal time limit, but given that both sides, it seems that both sides are continuing to increase their leverage, there can be a point when, the whole talks would be meaningless, because on the one hand, with each round of negotiations, failing to persuade the United States to lift the sanctions, Iran continues with its nuclear activity, the development of its nuclear activities. And at the same time, we have witnessed, more tensions in the region in terms of Iran, for example, or Iran-backed groups in Syria and Iraq increasing their activities against U.S. targets, and Israel also acting against Iran. But at the same time, this development, there's a point, there's a final point to this development of Iran's nuclear program, because, imagine a situation when Iran, for example, reaches to 90% enrichment capacity. So what next? So that's what I mean. The sooner we get a deal, the better. But the thing is that if Iran decides to go for example, 90% or whatever, then there could be a backlash from even its partners, from Russia and China, and the Iranian file can go back to the UN Security Council. So in that sense, even Iran will be one of the losers. So that will be, to my understanding, that will be a kind of lose-lose situation. And just hoping that working with neighbors and working with China and Russia can really help alleviate Iran's economic, wounds that it have suffered from over the past several years. I don't think that it's going to bear results, at least in the short.
Okay, we're coming to the end of the program. Mohammed Mirandi, I'd like to come back to you. Iran's chief negotiator, in an interview with Al Jazeera, said that world powers cannot reject Iran's draft proposal. We know saying that is one thing. Whether it turns out to be true is quite another. How much hope do you think there is, really, of a resolution that is satisfactory to all sides at this point?
Well, the fact is that Iran has the moral high ground, and that is important in itself, no matter how you calculate it. And in addition to that, the Iranians have a stronger hand than the Americans. True, the economy in Iran is not doing well, but the maximum pressure campaign has failed. There's no doubt about that. Until the United States understands and comprehends that, we're not going to have a solution. I don't believe that the United States and Iran are going to come to an agreement very soon, because I don't believe that the United States can come down from its high horse, at least for the moment. But the tide has turned against the United States. I'm not saying that the United States is on the verge of collapse, but what I am saying is that things are increasingly difficult for the United States. And if the United States wants to cut costs in this region with all the problems that it's facing, okay, the only sane thing to do is to implement the nuclear deal, and all Iran wants is the full implementation of the nuclear deal with verification.
All right, thank you very much. We will have to leave it there for time. A big thank you to all of our guests, Mohammed Mirandi, Hilary Mann-Leverett and Hamad Reza Azizi. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanel, and the whole team here in Doha, bye-bye for now.